How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour two.
Hello, America. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I am happy to have you. You know, Laura Logan, she used to be a pretty credible journalist. She was with what, CBS or somewhere? This is her tweet. Welcome to the world of cyber terrorism. According to intelligence sources, the Baltimore Bridge collapse was a 9/11 style attack, but they won't admit it, and we cannot see it because it was a cyber attack. All the SCADA systems that run our critical infrastructure, like sewage, electric grid, shipping, etc., are all wide open systems with no encryption. Because it's too expensive, they can shut us down anytime they want. Y'all, this was not a 9/11 style attack. It was a ship that hit a support column of a bridge in Baltimore. There are six people thus far unaccounted for, not thousands of Americans. And if you really wanted to sabotage it, you would have gone into the port and caused chaos there because ships can be rerouted. What a bizarre, crazy thing. This is what happens when you get addicted to clicks. Also, I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert. But I know the experts who know these things. The ship is the MV Dolly. The Dolly is owned by Grace Ocean Limited. It is was constructed in South Korea, and it is flagged to Singapore. It was built in 2014. That's key because that's before the Internet of Things in shipping. It, very, very, very unlikely, according to the experts, that this was any sort of cyber attack, in large part because the ships that were built at that time were largely analog ships. It's remarkable that anyone would say that. Hey, I can hack into this ship and steer it. Allahu Akbar. Oh, hey, I happen to know its precise GPS location, and I'm going to turn at 3 degrees and slam into this thing at 1:30 in the morning without visual support. I'm just using GPS. Yeah, really? Really? Just so dumb. Just so dumb. Also, by the way, the ship has crashed before, and the captain of the ship was blamed at the time. But this appears to be a mechanical failure. It appears to be an electrical failure. And again, mechanical and electrical failures, the ship built from 2014, highly unlikely to have the Internet of Things wired into it to be able to hack it, to be able to steer it, to be able to crash it, all of that sort of stuff. Stop catastrophizing accidents. Now, I got to move on to NBC. Because there is still today a lot of outrage. A lot of outrage. Last night, it was on full display at MSNBC, the hiring of Rona McDaniel. You had, Rachel Maddow, just in full meltdown mode over Rona McDaniel. It just remarkable tirade on that network.
And I will also say, if you care what I think about this, I will tell you the fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable. I mean, you wouldn't hire a wise guy. You wouldn't hire a made man like a mobster to work at a DA's office, right? you wouldn't hire a pickpocket to work as a TSA screener. And so I find the decision to put her on the payroll inexplicable. And I hope they will reverse their decision.
You hired Michael Steele, Republican chairman of the RNC. You hired Jen Psaki, White House press secretary. You've given her a starring role in the network. You hired Al Sharpton. You hired Joy Reid. I want to be very blunt. I want to be very frank. I want to be very straightforward with you. I will keep nothing from you. Not Fox News, not Newsmax, not OAN, not CNN, but MSNBC. MSNBC was the chosen network of choice for two mass political assassins in this country, would-be assassins, Floyd Lee Corkins, who decided to go to the Family Research Council, shoot the place up, and stuff all the dead faces with Chick-fil-A sandwiches because he did not like that conservative organization, which he considered a hate group, and James Hodgkinson, who was a Rachel Maddow viewer on MSNBC and a Bernie Sanders supporter who attempted the mass assassination of Republican members of Congress. MSNBC's claim to fame is to inspire two mass assassination attempts on the right. And for all of you who want to talk about a January 6th insurrection, the MSNBC viewers who rioted the day of Trump's inauguration did more damage to Washington, D.C. than the Trump supporters on January 6th. Yes, there were a lot of MSNBC watchers storming the beaches of Washington, D.C. on Trump's inauguration day, attacking police and smashing windows and burning up a limousine. And that network has the audacity to be upset with Ronna McDaniel. They've got Joy Reid and Al Sharpton on their network, for God's sakes. They are the network that helped seed the narrative that Russia stole the 2016 election. And many Democrats still believe it. And they're upset about Ronna McDaniel being on the network. Let me explain something to those of you in the media. Half this country hates your guts, and instead of blaming them, maybe you should think, what did we do to be hated by so many people? You can blame Trump for some of it, but that you can't blame yourselves for any of it is a remarkably damning indictment on your lack of humility. Now, I get hate from people on the right for saying, I know I like Chuck Todd. We have a fine relationship. Don't always agree with him. Know where he comes from. But I got to tell you, even for Chuck, his tirade, I got to say, was a little bit remarkable coming from him. This is what he said on Sunday on Meet the Press.
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. Well, I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC.
She was, Chuck. It was literally her job. And by the way, you know it was literally your job, Chuck, because you had Ronna McDaniel on your program yourself some time ago in 2017 and were bragging about it.
Welcome back. If it seems as if there's not enough open dialogue between members of our two political parties, you're right, there isn't. But dating back to the 60s, Meet the Press has been a place where some of those conversations have taken place by having the chairs of the DNC and RNC on the show together. Today, the parties are losing ground to their activist wings, chasing after the very voters they're supposed to lead. And joining me now in their first joint appearance since starting their new jobs, DNC Chair Tom Perez, RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel.
Okay, and you can say, well, things changed. She became this person who attacked the media, attacked the credibility of the networks. By the way, she deserved to, I personally think. But you can say things changed from 2017. Well, here you are in 2020.
If the president had a history of playing down things, that might be believable. But considering what he did with immigration and the caravans, what he does now about violence in the cities,
This isn't a president who shies away from trying to incite panic or trying to fire folks up. This doesn't seem to match that. It looks to a lot of people as if the president didn't want to panic people because he's worried the virus hurts him politically. Why shouldn't folks view this comment through that lens?
Oh, I disagree that the president took political calculations.
We can stop there. He was willing to have her on in 2020 and ask tough questions. Not only was he willing to have her on in 2020, but in November of last year, they were willing to have her on Meet the Press and fawn over Ronald McDaniel. In November of last year, Kristen Welker, the new host of Meet the Press, was willing to fawn over Ronald McDaniel for what? Because NBC wanted to do a Republican debate. And they had to kiss Ronald McDaniel's butt to make it happen, and they were willing to do it.
Thank you for being part of that, because this is a time where we met the moment.
Thank you so much for having us. It was an honor co-moderate that debate. We really appreciate it. Ronald McDaniel, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
Oh, yeah, great to see you. And now it's a problem? November, December, January, February, 5 months later, suddenly it's an ethical problem because you are upset that you think she was paid to give you the Republican Party line. It was her job. Here's the problem. You can come up with every excuse, every yes, but about Ronald McDaniel, stolen elections, all that stuff. You have the opportunity to now put her in a chair and confront her with her prior remarks, and she is paid to sit there and take it, and you're upset that she now has to distinguish what does Ronald McDaniel believe versus what does the RNC believe? What does Ronald McDaniel really think about the things Ronald McDaniel of the RNC said? You could do all of that. Instead, you're throwing a temper tantrum, and this is the problem. Despite all of your yes, but stolen election, yes, but January 6th, you do it with every single conservative. You did it with me. In fact, in 2020, when I said I would support Donald Trump, you people at NBC took me off Meet the Press. I had a once every month standing appointment on MSN on Meet the Press, gone the moment I said I'd support Trump. You did it with Kevin Williamson at The Atlantic. You even did it with Sarah Isger. She was hired from the Justice Department, the Trump Justice Department. And you were enraged that she would be playing an editorial role at CNN. So they decided and said, no, she'll be a commentator. Then, no, she's not going to be here. She went to ABC News as a commentator, enraged that she was a commentator. Every Republican who comes out of the conservative movement, you get enraged that they're on television. You did it to me going back in 2009, tried to cost me my job at CNN. And you know what CNN did? They put me on a Howard Kurtz interview when he was still there and asked all the tough questions. The left says this. You said this. Are you ashamed? Do you apologize? Went through the whole motions. At least back then they stood by me. They don't even do that anymore. You can't say this is about the truth when you people regularly lie. You hired that Ben Collins hack, and he lies about the right and claims he's fighting disinformation, and he's at NBC News. You know, if you wanted a legitimate criticism of Ronald McDaniel, it's that MAGA is done with her and Never Trump embraced her. So why are you hiring her to be a voice of the GOP when she doesn't represent any portion of the movement? There's your legitimate criticism, except that's what you guys do all the time. You put people on television as your paid contributors who don't actually represent any portion of the Republican Party and make them your Republican voices because you want to be the gatekeepers. Here's the rule that you got to apply. You don't get to be the gatekeepers of the left, and you don't get to be the gatekeepers of the right. When the right embraces someone as someone they listen to, you put that person on television, and you ask them tough questions, and you learn from them. And if they're a fool, an idiot, a moron, or racist, that drags their party down, not you down, but you don't want to elevate the voices. The party's elevated. You want to pick and choose the voices you want to elevate. You should have never elevated Ronna McDaniel because she's not one of the voices that people listen to anymore. But you chose to, and now you're upset about it. You people at NBC News, your MSNBC network was what two would-be political assassins like to watch on television. You have no reason to complain. You should be apologizing for yourselves, not her hiring.
Several fronts of breaking news happening now. NBC News reportedly deciding to fire Ronna McDaniel now that they've hired her. She's lawyering up. They're trying to come up with a way to get out of the contract. There you have it. Also, breaking news, President Biden has released a statement about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore, saying he expects a full federal appropriation to pay for it. Doesn't think Maryland should have to kick in anything on it. I actually disagree with that. I realize it's a tragedy, but it's also a state, not just a federal highway system. And yeah, the taxpayers in Maryland should have to kick in some money to rebuild their bridge, not just a federal appropriation. But that's just me. Call me hard-hearted, but we're headed towards a fiscal cliff in this country. And that's just not good. Okay. We got a lot more that we got to talk about today. I do need to warn you. The polling shift has begun. Now, it's the Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll, which I'm not a fan of, but people pay attention to the trends. President Biden has gained ground against Donald Trump in 6 of 7 key swing states, and significantly so in at least 2 of them. The results makes the strongest Democratic polling in months. The move in the president's direction comes after 5 months of mostly consistent Trump lead and follows the State of the Union that rallied Democrats. The shift was significant in Wisconsin, where Biden leads Trump by 1 point after trailing him by 4 in February, and in Pennsylvania, where the candidates are tied after Trump held a 6-point lead. They are also tied in Michigan. It's too soon to know whether the improved showing is a one-time bump or the beginning of a more durable change in the race, and Biden continues to lag in 4 crucial states. But the blue wall battlegrounds, if held, could vault Biden to a second term. Now, of course, the polls are going to consolidate. I've been telling you all for a year this would happen. It is an issue that you got to be mindful of, but it's also Morning Consult. We need to see more polling trend data. But I would not be surprised to find a narrowing of the polls. One of the things that voters have been thinking the whole time is that Republicans, there's no way they would renominate Donald Trump. They have, and now that's coming to bear. And we'll also shift to a likely voter model. That'll give us a greater sense of the landscape as we get closer to November. So hold on. This is going to be a close race one way or the other. Around the country, Americans for Prosperity is training conservatives to be great activists to try to get out the vote and try to push on issues. School choice has been a really big issue for them. In my state of Georgia, in South Carolina, and Tennessee and others, they've been pushing conservative activists. In Georgia and South Carolina, successfully so, to get school choice passed. It's what they do. They teach you how to go door to door, to explain to your neighbors the issues, to go to your state legislatures and local governments, to talk credibly about the issues, to be competent, and to be approachable. What they've also done remarkably is they bought Binomics.com, and they really want me to tell you about Binomics.com. If you go to Binomics.com, you can see what Joe Biden said about his economic record versus the reality. It's easily shareable with your friends and family to educate them on Binomics and the economy. Cannot believe the Biden team didn't buy Binomics.com, but they didn't, and Americans for Prosperity did. If you want to find out more about the organization, go to AmericansForProsperity.org/Eric. But really, they want you to go to Binomics.com, share it with your friends and family, learn about the economy, the facts, not just Joe Biden's spin, at Binomics.com. Hello there. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. Across the United States of America, Congresswoman Kat Kamick from Florida is going to join me at the top of the next hour. She's on the Commerce and Energy Committee in the House. Talk to her about this Baltimore situation. You know, she's near the port of Jacksonville down in Florida, and on that committee and the Ag Committee as well, all of which is deeply impacted by the port closure in Baltimore. It is the number 2 exporter of coal in the country. It is the number 1 importer of sugar in the country, as well as farm equipment in the country. All of that impacted. The governor of New York saying that she will work with Maryland to reassess capacity at the port of New York to do as much accommodation as possible. You're seeing others step up as well in that regard with capacity issues. Further south, Jacksonville, the port of Savannah, the port of Charleston, all of those as well. The problem is with a lot of manufacturing capacity in the country, they need mid-Atlantic ports. So the Tidewater area of Virginia and up is going to be deeply important to make sure there's enough capacity on that. Now, I want to switch gears. My friends, I wish to discuss something that white people like. It is like something that white people really, really like. When you talk to progressive white people about the state of the world, it comes up a lot. It is something white progressives in particular really, really like. It's called a two-state solution for Israel and Palestine. And you know what? It's been offered six times and rejected each time by the Palestinians. Did you know that? We're hearing this yet again from the Biden administration. We need a two-state solution in the Middle East. They're really furious that Donald Trump was able to establish pretty good peace ties in the Middle East. And it's a problem. By the way, the president just a short time ago at the White House was asked about Netanyahu canceling Israel's decision not to go to a meeting at the White House this week.
What did you make of Israel's decision not to attend this meeting this week?
Oh, I don't want to get into that. We've got plenty of time to talk about Rafah.
You mentioned the port.
Doesn't want to get into that. He only wanted to talk about the port. He only wanted to talk about the port. I should play you his comments before I get into this Israel stuff.
And the quality of life. My transportation secretary is there now. As I told Governor Moore, I've directed my team to move heaven and earth to reopen the port and rebuild the bridge as soon as humanly possible. And we're going to work hand in hand with the support of Maryland to support Maryland and whatever they ask for. We're going to work with our partners in Congress to make sure the state gets the support it needs. It's my intention that federal government will pay for the entire cost of reconstructing that bridge. And I expect the Congress to support my effort. This is going to take some time. The people of Baltimore can count on us, though, to stick with them at every step of the way until the port is reopened and the bridge is rebuilt. You know, we're not leaving until this job gets done. Not leaving until then.
Is that a threat? I mean, I don't know that the feds should pay for the entire cost of the bridge. It is a Maryland port in Maryland issue. But nonetheless, the president didn't want to comment on Netanyahu. So the White House refused to veto a pro-Hamas resolution in the United Nations Security Council yesterday. And Benjamin Netanyahu has said, well, we're not sending people to Washington, D.C. The feds are now doubling down on a two-state solution. It's what white people who are progressives want. It has been offered by Israel multiple times. I saw Ron Brownstein, the political analyst commentator on CNN last night. He was commenting on this as something that needed to happen, that we needed a two-state solution, and Bibi Netanyahu needed to bow down to the United States and adhere to our demands. And he pointed out that when Benjamin Netanyahu met Bill Clinton in the 90s, back during his first tenure of his prime ministership, Bill Clinton asked Benjamin Netanyahu, "Don't you know who the superpower is here?" In some rather colorful language. Buddy of mine responded to Ron Brownstein basically saying the Israelis need to do what Biden wants, saying, you know, people don't like to talk about it this way, but Israel is a client state of the United States, and it's true, they are. You may not like that, you may be offended by it, but it's true, they rely on us for a lot. In return, we do expect them to try to give us what we want, except they're not a complete client state, and we can't completely order them around. There is always some give and take. But what people here don't understand, and I don't know that I can fully convey this to you. Benjamin Netanyahu is not popular in Israel right now. If you will recall, there were about five elections in Israel in the past year or so, as coalition governments kept being unable to find coherent coalitions, and they kept losing and having to do another election. And there were four or five of those elections. And it was always a roughly 50-50 split. And Netanyahu's coalition very often got in the minority but could build a coalition with other parties. It's a multi-party parliament and was able to build coalitions and become the prime minister of the Knesset. But he's not well-liked. He's not beloved anymore. his time has passed. And a lot of people blame him for the distractions that led to the terror attack on October 7th in Israel. But what he did was he moved from a cabinet of a majority and formed a war cabinet and a war coalition. And even the parties that oppose Bibi Netanyahu have come into this coalition united to take out Hamas. And when the United States says that the solution here is a two-state solution and Benjamin Netanyahu, he can't go into Rafah because there are so many Gaza citizens who have been pushed to Rafah by this invasion, our leadership in this country and many Americans do not understand the resolve of the Israelis to eradicate Hamas. You don't understand this. This is not a left-right issue in Israel. There's not a partisan divide in Israel. From the far left to the far right, Israel is single-mindedly determined to wipe out Hamas. And if that means going into Rafah and killing innocent Palestinians along the way, they're going to do it to eliminate Hamas. This has galvanized public support in Israel in the way September 11th galvanized support for George Bush. George Bush came into the presidency the first time in over 100 years that a president had won the Electoral College and lost the popular vote. He had 48-49% approval rating. 9/11 happened and his popularity in the country skyrocketed. Democrats and Republicans alike rallied around him even through 2002 when the nation gave Republicans complete control of Congress because the Democrats were trying to politicize the Department of Homeland Security and unionize its members. To this day, they're mad at Republicans for attacking Max Cleland, but it worked. It was right. Cleland was wrong. And the partisans in this country rallied to George W. Bush. The same thing's happening in Israel right now. Partisans from left to right are rallying around Netanyahu. And every time Joe Biden and the Democrats try to bully Netanyahu into pausing so that Hamas can escape another day, his popularity, Netanyahu's popularity, goes up. They're making him more popular at a time he was on the verge of political collapse because of their incompetence. And you know what helped today? The leaders of Hamas today have gone to Tehran in Iran and held a press conference bragging about Joe Biden betraying Israel, bragging about the Americans turning their backs on the Israelis, wanting the Israelis to know that they're isolated and they are alone. This happened today. They have turned their backs, the Biden administration has, on Benjamin Netanyahu because they've never liked him at all and they've been looking for an opportunity. They've been looking for some time for a way to stab Israel in the back because they don't like him. They don't like Netanyahu. They don't like his conservative coalition. And here it comes. They allowed this resolution to go through the United Nations. They're demanding a two-state solution. Y'all, they've been offered, the Palestinians have, a two-state solution four or five times. Yasser Arafat was offered a two-state solution by Bill Clinton, and she rejected it. About a month ago, I played audio from Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was pointing out to people, a bunch of progressives, that Yasser Arafat had been offered a two-state solution by the Clinton administration, by the Israelis, and they turned it down. And that was on them. It was that they decided they didn't want it. She went on The View. She was explaining the situation to the women on The View. She was explaining to them how Israel was willing. Israel had a willingness to divide up its land and give land to the Palestinians. And the Palestinians declined. They didn't want peace. They didn't want division. They didn't want self-governance. They want river to sea. They want the elimination of the Jewish people. They want the elimination of the Jewish state. They want an elimination of Israel. That the Biden administration refuses to recognize this, that the Biden administration is walking it all back, that the Biden administration is refusing to stand with Israel because of the heckler's veto of the anti-Semites in the upper Midwest who they're afraid of losing. It's a problem. Yeah, thank you, Philip. This is Hillary Clinton. Let's see. In her interview. Oh, come on, stop. I gotta get through the stupid mandatory ad. He just found this on YouTube. This is the clip I was starting with. I couldn't find the audio myself. But here, this is it. This is Hillary Clinton. Listen to this.
Personally committed to trying to figure out how to help the Israelis and the Palestinians live in peace. And I negotiated a ceasefire in November of 2012. So I understand what it takes to try to stop violence. But remember, there was a ceasefire on October 6th that Hamas broke by their barbaric assault on peaceful civilians and their kidnapping, their killing, their beheading, their terrible, inhumane savagery. There was a ceasefire. It did not hold because Hamas chose to break it. So you have to keep several things in your head at the same time, and that is, number one, Hamas is a terrorist organization. It has made very clear it is committed to the elimination of the state of Israel, and it has consistently broken ceasefires over a number of years. Israel has a right to defend itself, as any country would. Ukraine has a right to defend itself against an invasion, an unlawful, inhumane invasion by Russia. And Israel should conduct itself by the laws of war and do everything it can to prevent and limit civilian casualties. Those three things are all true themselves. And so when I said a couple of weeks ago that it wasn't time for a ceasefire because it would enable Hamas to rearm and reposition. Because I've been to Gaza, and Gaza is a highly populated urban environment. And what has been going on now for a number of years under Hamas rule is the building of over 200 miles of tunnels under Gaza, the storing of munitions, all kinds of explosives, under hospitals, under refugee camps, under civilian targets. The use of civilians as really just tools of war by Hamas, that has all been going on. And so when I said you could not have a ceasefire, people didn't understand that Hamas would use it for their own purposes.
I can stop there. Maybe she needs to advise the Biden administration. Remarkable, more clarity from her than Biden. Y'all, let me tell you about Old Glory Bank before I get out of here. Old Glory has a banking bill of rights they want you to see because they're not going to give your information to the feds. They're not going to prohibit your banking transactions that are legal just because they don't like who you're doing business with. They don't care. You can go to oldglorybank.com and see the banking bill of rights. Let me tell you about my experience with Old Glory Bank because I've had a bank account with them for over a year now, or about a year now. Well, before they became an advertiser. I don't get fees. I put money into the bank. It doesn't get eaten up with fees. I do online bill pay. I can do budgeting tools. They have great, great online features. One of the coolest aspects of this and the reason my kids' accounts are there is because like odd jobs, babysitting and stuff, they get paid in cash. We go to 85,000 retail locations around the country, give the cashier the cash, fill out a form. It gets deposited into their Old Glory Bank account, gets directly deposited into their Old Glory Bank account. And so they can earn money, and even though there's not a physical bank branch near us, with cash they can do this. With checks they can do online check deposit. It's great. It's a wonderful bank. OldGloryBank.com. You can get an account up in 8 minutes or less. You can see their banking bill of rights. OldGloryBank.com. I really have enjoyed them. It's been really great for my kids. OldGloryBank.com. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Terms and conditions apply. Hello there. Welcome. Short segment here. I apologize. I went long in the last one playing that Clinton audio, but it was worth it to hear how reasonable and responsible she was in that. The fact of the matter is, if Israel wants to storm into Rafah and kill Hamas, Israelis aren't going to care, and I will stand with Israel, not this administration that is scared of the anti-Semitic heckler's veto in the upper Midwest. They saw those numbers come in from Michigan, and they know what the situation is in Minnesota, and they're like, oh, we got to suddenly turn into Hamas supporters to keep these progressives on our side to win an election. And that's what's so sick about this. The man who said he would always do the right thing, damn the consequences, is willing to abandon our big ally in the Middle East, a democracy, because he's afraid of the anti-Semitic hecklers in the upper Midwest, and they might stay home and not help him, or they might go to Donald Trump. It's absolutely offensive and absurd. When we come back, Congresswoman Kat Kamick from the 3rd Congressional District in Florida. She's on the Ag Committees and the Energy and Commerce Committee in Congress at play with this bridge collapse in Baltimore. So much of the nation's cargo goes through there, particularly for farm trade. I'm going to talk to her about that and just this clown show that's happening in Congress right now, which is just perplexing to see.
Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at H-E-R-O.co.